another episode of Deadlines in Hollywood podcast. I am Amanda Nduka, and I'm sitting next to...
I am Dino Ray Ramos.
Hey, Dino.
Hey.
So I just got back from Toronto, and we just did something really exciting with the podcast. We did our first official live recording with the podcast.
Well, you did. I wasn't there.
Dino wasn't able to come, but
he got his shout out.
but it was this panel consisting of these female filmmakers from established filmmakers to you know, burgeoning filmmakers, and they have all made short films. And we just came together and had this really great conversation about the state of female filmmaking in Hollywood right now. Some of the panelists included Yara Shahidi.
It was a huge panel.
Yara, who's a star. This was her first time she directed a film. Jessica Sanders, who's a more established filmmaker. You also had Gillian Jacobs, who's people won't know her more for her acting.
Community and Love, right?
Yeah, Gillian Barnes, Janine Sherman Barah, who's the showrunner for Claws. Ivy Agrigan, and Anna Martimucci, who's also known as A.M. Lucas. We just had this really great conversation, and they hosted a brunch.
Yeah.
So people got to get their grub on, and it was super insightful. And it was probably my favorite thing out of the whole festival, to be honest. Yeah. But yeah, other than that, we saw some great films. I saw First Man, which
you're
hearing good things about that one. That
Toronto, I mean, like, it's one of my favorite festivals when I get to go. And it's kind of like the launching pad of award season, basically, because that's when... You know, that's where La La Land was. That's where Moonlight. Well, Moonlight was also in Telluride.
Moonlight was. But
Telluride bleeds into Toronto, basically. Yeah. And so, what else is First Man? A Star Is Born.
A Star Is Born, which is my favorite out of everything that I saw. I didn't get to see that much. I saw probably like six or seven films, but A Star Is Born took the cake to me.
Yeah.
Like Lady Gaga is amazing. She's amazing, and that's really the only word I can think of. And Bradley too, like he surprised me. His directorial style was, I think, very unique.
Really?
I think it's something that I personally haven't seen before.
I actually this weekend watched the 1976 A Star Is Born to prep myself.
Nice. I hadn't seen the other.
I was like, is this supposed to be good?
Yeah.
I mean, it was fine, and it was Barbra Streisand and Kris Kristofferson, because it reminds me of like when I was looking at the trailer for A Star Is Born, the new one, because there's similarities, because there's also the Judy Garland one, which is like 1940 something or 19. It's the older one.
There's an even older one.
Yeah, there's like
isn't there like three?
There's three prior ones. But yeah, A Star Is Born has been in the works forever.
Because
Clint Eastwood was going to direct with Beyonce.
It's the standout. I haven't seen anything. I know.
Did you watch Beale Street?
No, I missed it, but I saw the reactions on Twitter, and he was getting really. And apparently, he got super emotional during his presentation.
Barry Jenkins'
movie. Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't get to watch Roma, which is kind of
because that one won like the big award out of Venice, right?
Yeah, I think so. That one, First Man, and Star Is Born.
Those are the four buzzy ones out of the festival. No, I have to say Star Is Born. Like, it was so funny. It was like a concert. So anytime Gaga would perform, the whole theater would like erupt in clapping.
Oh.
And like during like the silent emotional moment, you could hear everybody just sniffling. I kind of laughed a little bit because it was just kind of awkward that everybody was just crying. But like there were points where some people were turning away because it got really, really.
Really?
Like,
okay.
Not like graphic, but it just the
well, like if it ends like the 1976 one, like I would think. Well, we'll talk about it off mic because.
I'm not going to spoil it, but I think the underlying plots are the same, but just the way things happen
different. And the music. I would really highly recommend watching because it's on Netflix.
I'm gonna watch it.
Because I was like, and it was like the 70s, so it was when like that whole movement of realistic filmmaking was coming into play, and like it's like so real. And I was, and apparently like I was looking up after like. Not everyone got along.
Oh, really?
Apparently, the director and Barbra Streisand didn't
get
along.
Wait. Barbra Streisand did not. I can't believe that.
Right. No, you could tell Gaga and
Their chemistry is like off the charts.
Off the freaking charts. Yeah. Another one I have to give a shout out to is Widows.
Shout out
to Viola.
Of course.
I've never seen Viola in a role like this before. And I was highly pleased.
Well, it's that, and it's Steve McQueen, yeah, who I think is an amazing filmmaker. Just like the choices he makes, like I remember watching Shame for the first time, and I don't know if you've have you
I haven't seen
Shame?
That, but I know mm-hmm. I know it's and, Michael I mean, Fassbender.
Yeah, there's the scene in the beginning where it's just him and his nakedness.
Bahari.
No, but it's Nicole. Yeah, she's in it too. And then 12 Years a Slave, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, that movie was definitely. I think. I don't want to rank them. Honestly, I'm just going to say Star Is Born was my favorite album.
Okay.
But that was definitely, it's definitely up there, I think. So yeah. Oh, and before we move on to this recording, I forgot to mention earlier that this was actually done in partnership with Refinery 29.
Oh.
They're the ones that have this.
It's called Shatterbox.
They're Shatterbox, which is where they take these filmmakers and they give them this opportunity to, you know, get their voices out there and be heard, giving
shattering the box.
Yeah, exactly. And so all these ladies that were on this panel, they, like I said, they filmed their own shorts that are, I think, and I believe they're available on TNT's social media site. So definitely check them out. Like, let's give our female filmmakers
some
love.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, and then like I remember seeing pictures, and I, you know, of course I was like, oh my God, I wish I was there. But at the same time, it's kind of cool seeing like the setup that y'all had.
Oh my God,
looked
it was amazing.
Yeah. And then I was looking on Twitter, and I was like, oh my God, people are starting to like our past tweets of a New Hollywood podcast.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I was really excited.
Great response, great event. So yeah, let's get to the talk. Thank you guys so much for being here for our first ever Deadline New Hollywood live podcast recording.
Woo!
So my name is Amanda Nduka, and I'm just going to tell you a little bit about our podcast. I, along with my co-host, Dino Ramos, who couldn't be here, sadly, we co-host this podcast for Deadline, where we basically, it's a celebration of diversity in Hollywood. So we strive to feature artists from communities that have been traditionally overlooked in the industry. So people of color, people in the LGBTQ communities, people in disabled communities, immigrants, and like the one we have today, women. And we are happy to have Refinery 29 here with us to kick off this launch. So I'm going to pass it over to Amy and Shannon, and they're going to explain a little bit about their Shatterbox program.
Good morning, everybody. Woo! I was told that this is a place filled with love, and that was this place's intention. So I just want to give a shout out to all of you entrepreneurial women who are here today, who work out of this space, and good for you, and we support you, and we're just really glad to be here. So I'm Amy Emmerich, the Chief Content Officer of Refinery 29. Thank you very much. With me is...
I'm Shannon Gibson, the Executive Producer of Shatterbox. Shatterbox exists to create opportunities for directors who have historically been overlooked, namely women.
Just half the population. Okay, so we are really excited to introduce you to the directors of this season, Shatterbox. I'm just going to stand over here so they can come on up. First up, Gilly Barnes. Ivy Agrigan. Haha, and give me a minute. Janine Sherman Barreau. I messed that up. Yara Shahidi. Gillian Jacobs. Jessica Sanders. And A.M. Lucas. Did I get everybody? Good morning, power women. Have a seat on this beautiful blue couch with A.M. To kick this off, we just want all of you to enjoy a clip of Refinery 29 and TNT's Shatterbox. Enjoy.
How do you know what you're looking at if you can't see the whole picture? If you're only presented with half? That's television today.
Action!
Women make up half the population. But only 21% of the stories we see come from a female perspective. It's time to bring these untold stories into focus.
Okay, let's reset.
Introducing Shatterbox, a new series of short films from Refinery29 and TNT that invites groundbreaking female directors to show us how they see the world, their way.
I think, what if my voice isn't good enough? Our voices are exactly what they need to be.
Because you don't know the half of it, and we deserve the full picture.
I don't want to talk about being a female director. I want to talk about being a director.
Expand your vision with a new series of short films and stream all Shatterbox films now on the TNT app.
So what I really love about this program, when I first became privy to it, is obviously giving females a voice, and also it's with established directors and also up and coming burgeoning directors. So I want to start with the first timers, the first time directors like Yara and Gillian. Could you talk about your experience within this program and what was it like? What was your biggest takeaway?
Well, I was terrified to do it, but it was an incredibly supportive environment with Refinery and TNT, and they gave me the freedom to make whatever I want, and it was exciting for me because some people that I got to hire I'd known for years and always wanted to work with, and then other people were new to me, but everyone really seemed to get on board with the mission of this whole Shatterbox series and worked so hard and gave it everything they had. So I couldn't have had a... I had a friend visit and went, it's a really nice set you've got going on. And it really was. It was just such a lovely group of people who worked really, really hard to make this happen.
I had a very similar experience. I think when they first called just saying, would you like to direct a short? I was like, wait, there are no parameters? Okay. But the lovely part about it was just being able to explore what story I wanted to tell and to have that freedom and have the support to actually push me forward and saying, yes, this is exactly how I want to tell it. And even in the process of writing the script, and I co-wrote it with actually one of the writers of Grownish, Jordan Redout. And that was a lovely process because even when we were on the phone explaining it, there was no explanation, there was no justification that had to happen in the process of it. It was very much just me explaining what I wanted to tell. And also the perks of having a creative family is that my bubba DP'd it, my mama EP'd it. So it was fully a family affair. Very grateful to be a Shahidi, because it made the set feel like home. There were people who literally, in the middle of shooting Black-ish, decided to come work as crew on my short. And it were those moments in which I realized that my voice was necessary and that my voice was being heard by people and that people respected that, which was very cool.
And for Janine and for Ivy, you guys have been behind the camera and worked with some amazing directors. This was your first directorial debut as well. What was it like getting into that director's chair?
It's funny, when you're writing television, you pass it on to the director. So it felt like it was all in your hands this time. You were responsible for not only the look, but also the talent and getting the story and telling the story and getting it out of actors. Oftentimes when you're just the writer, when you come to set, you're like, oh, it's the director's medium, so you give them their space. But when it's you, it's exhilarating. It's exhilarating.
I agree with that. I think being behind the camera and the ability to tell a story for somebody else with storyboards and everything that we do when we plan to shoot something, and having the ability to do it now for myself was phenomenal, because now I could now tell my story because I had been doing it for somebody else for so long. So it was amazing to have the opportunity to tell my story.
And for some of the ones that have a bit more directorial titles under their belt, what inspired you to become a director, and who were some of the people you looked up to during the early stages of your career? We can start with Jessica.
Well, I actually grew up in a filmmaking family, so I have a strong, rad
female director who's a my mom. So I do believe, like, if, like they say, like, if you see it, then you can be it. So, like, I grew up, my mom is a director, and so is my dad. So she's won an Oscar as a documentary filmmaker, and she just made a movie on Anita Hill, and she, you know, she does very incredible, like, civil rights stories and amazing people. So she's definitely a role model to me.
And Gillian? Jacobs? We have two. Oh, I'm sorry. Not Jake Barnes. I'm sorry. Matt Barnes. Sorry.
What was the question?
Who were some of the people you look up to in the early stages of your directing career?
Well, I think The Wizard of Oz is my favorite movie. And that's sort of a great thing because it represents the sort of furthest dream that a movie can be. And as you sort of, if you use it as your kind of like specter out on the horizon, you have like so many ways you can go as a creator because it's like sort of the best that Hollywood can be. You know, the dream machine can be so, and I think of that as a movie that is a collab. It's not just a director's vision. It's a sort of the combination of a great narrative with great execution, and that's sort of how I am too. I'm interested in sort of aggregating all these great people together to make these big weird visions. You know, so I think movies led me. I also come from a filmmaking family, by the way. Very helpful to see your mother in the editing room when you're 5 years old. I hope that we can all see more of those mothers. Anyway, so yeah, I think it was films, and then of course I Stanley Kubrick. I mean, I do love Jane Campion, and I also like kind of crazy Leni Riefenstahl, who made hideous Nazi propaganda films, but it was an amazing director. So I have some female avatar directors, but Stanley Kubrick, to me, is the god of filmmaking. So I think he was a big force that pulled me in.
Yeah. And I mean, we're obviously in a time where there's a lot of talk about change and change needing to happen, especially for female representation behind the camera. I guess we're seeing a bit of, progress, but the numbers are still really low. So what do you say to people who, I guess, what can you do in a sense where, you know, the playing field isn't fair? What would you say to emerging female filmmakers that are kind of like maybe not confident in what the numbers look like now at the current stage? Go ahead.
I think we probably all have things to say, but when you talk about younger filmmakers, I feel like passionately the need to respond. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would say, if you're young enough not to have heard these statistics, try and don't go near them and just start making stuff in a vacuum of possibility, because that's, you know.
Just do it.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, be strong for yourself, I think, is the thing, and just, like, live in your own bubble about this. We've taken a lot of the, we've taken a lot of the pushback, so you guys can walk a little bit of a clearer path. That's kind of the idea.
Yeah. And does anybody else?
It's funny. I think as women, oftentimes we're waiting for permission, and I think we have to just take it and do it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think you shouldn't wait anymore. You have an iPhone, make a movie. Mm-hmm. If you have a story that you want to tell, write it. I think yesterday we screened 8 amazing films. We all have different voices, all have different things to say, and it's up to us to just keep putting it out into the world because the world wants to see our stories.
Go ahead.
And I would also say specifically to young women who are interested in filmmaking that don't do what I did, which is mistake what you think is your personality for being wrong, for being a director. Like, I was circling directing for so long without realizing, oh, I want to be a director, because I kept telling myself, I'm just not the kind of personality who could, like, tell everybody what to do and be the person in charge. Like, I'm a little more laid back. It's just like, but I think honestly most of that is just happening to be socialized as a woman, you know, to like, well, those things, it doesn't happen to everybody, but it definitely was present with me, because then all of a sudden when I was kind of thrust into a position where I did it, I was like, oh, this is what I was meant to do, and I completely pushed it aside for like a good, like I missed like a decade of filmmaking because I did that. And I think that's a lot. It's a very gendery kind of thing that happens.
that kind of moves me to my next question. I just kind of want to go a little bit deep, but first, what were some of the early mistakes that you made, and how did they kind of shape you into the filmmaker you are today? And this is for anybody.
I don't know that I'd like to see it as mistakes. I think you just learn. Everything that you do for the first time, you go out there with everything you have, all the passion you have, and you're just going to learn. It's like anything you do. When you got on a bicycle the first time, you fell, and you didn't go, shit, what was my mistake? You're like, you jump back on that and just start riding it again until you caught up with your friends. And that's it. That you just do it. And just know that whatever you're saying, whatever you're doing, it's all going to come out, and your voice is going to be heard and seen, and every one of us has a super distinct story that is going to be told, and that's it. Don't be scared of it. Don't be scared of yourself. Don't be scared of people saying something, because you're the one doing it. So you could look at it as a mistake, or you just learn it. It's just a learning thing, and keep writing, and have fun with it, because that's what we're doing. We're having fun. You know, this is like a really phenomenal thing to do with your life. So, you know, I mean, that's what I say to that.
And
Well, I think my mistake was just my hesitance, and even then, I hate to even call it a mistake. But oftentimes, I feel like it's very familiar to us to operate in spaces that we don't own, whether it is figuratively or physically and literally, but constantly maneuvering through spaces, especially as a woman of color, that you have no sense of control over. And not to say that you haven't tried, and not to say that you haven't taken up as much space as you possibly can, but to say that it hasn't been made for you in mind. It's this idea of being integrated into a system that just thought, as long as we include you, that's enough, rather than physically making the room for you. And James Baldwin has this one line that says, would you like to be integrated into a burning house? And so it's one of those moments, I feel like, in which I've witnessed myself be hesitant in those spaces because I question my role in that space. And as prepared as I think I am and as prepared as I know I am, and this applies to AP Euro class and it applies to directing, but it's like as prepared as I knew I was, there are moments in which I was hesitant to really put my foot down within my own project. And it wasn't to say that there was anybody telling me I couldn't, but I think it was a more psychological moment of how many times have we been told we could? And fortunately, I do have that support system that does that for me, but it took that reminder from my support system after day one to be like, you know what, day two, you can be even louder and bigger, and what's going to happen except getting the results you want?
It's funny, yesterday when I saw my film, I've seen it a million times, and I saw some mistakes, and I was telling a friend, I said, gosh, I wish I had done this, I wish I had done that. They're like, just make another one. That's what you gotta do. You gotta just keep making them. So I think that's what you learn from making a film, is to make another film and keep making it better.
So I want to touch on another subject that we've been hearing has been on top of conversations, which is pay. And the disparity that we're seeing in our industry. What would you guys, because, you know, it's a very intimidating thing to approach when it comes to saying what your value is and being steadfast, especially as a young filmmaker. What would you guys say, what kind of advice would you give to people on how to negotiate those waters?
Someone who said something I thought was really smart is, unless you're truly willing to walk away, it's not a negotiation. So being okay with saying no and letting something go rather than taking less than what you deserve, but that also takes the confidence to know that something else will happen, because I have more experience as an actor than a director, but you feel very replaceable as an actor, and I think it's to, you know, producers and studios benefit that you feel replaceable, because you don't feel like you can really negotiate that hard. But realizing that, like, even if I have to let this or that project go, but I've stood to what I felt like I deserved to make, that was a better choice for me.
And the truth is, when you do that, somehow, like, the percentage of times they come back and give you the job, it's like it has become a genuine tactic for me as well. It's like being willing to walk away, but then not having to. You know?
Yeah,
I also think we have to talk about numbers and what people are making. I think this is where men do come in, because if you ask them what they got paid and they're your friends, you can use that number to say, no, this is what I should get paid. And I think a lot of times we're, you know, sort of conditioned not to speak about money because it's rude, but in this business, it is about money. So getting your worth, the only way you'll know what your worth is if you see what other people are getting compensated.
Oh, I just had like a silly aside about how Meryl Streep said that the first time in her extremely long career that she felt like she properly negotiated and got what she deserved on a movie was The Devil Wears Prada, not that long ago. You know what I mean? She was like, that's the one where I was like, I'm Meryl Streep. Like, you're gonna pay me more than everybody else. So I thought that was funny.
And I kind of want to flip the tables a little bit. So, you know, a lot of times we hear that a solution to the problem with the lack of females behind the camera is because there's not enough females in high-level positions giving us the jobs. But then there are people that say that that's not the case, that, you know, power can corrupt people at times. What would you guys say to those critics?
Well, sorry, it always bothers me when they're like, I meet people who are like, well, there aren't any women directors. I'm like, actually, half of film schools are women, half of the films at Sundance are women, but then when it gets to hiring practices in Hollywood, it goes down to 4% or 6%. So it's not for lack of any talent. So my solution is hire women and take a little effort and like figure out who's great. Here's, you know, 8 awesome directors. There's like so many. There's Free the Bid, which is a website that promotes like commercial directors. There's Femme Fatales. There's so many resources to find incredibly talented and experienced women filmmakers, cinematographers. So yeah, the solution is to hire. It's not that hard, I think.
And it's also to pay attention. Like, there's a risk in hiring new people, but take the risk. Somebody had to take a shot on someone, so take the risk.
And I think we have to wrap it up soon, but I kind of want to end on this question, because you guys are all sitting here because you refuse to accept the current state as the status quo. So just as a fun question and how we like to wrap up the podcast is, each of you guys can answer, what's your favorite part about being a female filmmaker?
I think just being a female, being a filmmaker is to tell stories. I want to tell stories, and they're burning inside. So just being able to hold up a mirror to this culture right now and history and to make your mark is cool.
Yeah, and I think there's like an interesting relationship that all of us directors who happen to be women have with this like female director thing. It's this love-hate thing where I want to be, as I said on the Calypti thing, like, I don't want to talk about being a female director. I want to talk about being a director. And what I mean by that is just, like, won't it be nice when we get to the point where this is not a conversation anymore, because it's like, it would, like, be us talking about when are we going to get the right to vote, you know what I mean? Like, when it's just normal, we live in a world that is normal and sane, and half of the women are directors, maybe sometimes 65% of them, you know what I mean? So, but since we do live in the world right now, and I force myself to have this relationship with reality, I think it's important to take it on and be like, yeah, call attention to the fact that we are female filmmakers, and watch how different our stuff is, that it's not all the same, that it's not less cool or less marketable or less anything. It's just humans making films who have, you know, historically not been allowed to make films. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
I also feel like maybe the audiences can tell us what's great about, like, a female filmmaker. Because when I saw the trailer for Wonder Woman, I saw that the action was different than any male action I've ever seen. There was a balletic quality to the way that she was moving the actors through the space and the camera around the actors. And it was literally motivated by dance, and I could see it right away. And so I think we can't see ourselves from inside, what we're bringing that's new. But every time you see a new voice, you see exactly where it's coming from. And so I think audiences, it would be really nice to have a podcast where you talk to a bunch of really big film fanatics and ask them what they see that's great about female filmmakers. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I'd just be curious. Yeah.
And I also don't like to think too much like about being a woman. Like, I'm a director, but even seeing all of our films, I was like, this is so refreshing because like 96% is, you know, been told through a white male perspective, and like we're all very, there's so much like fresh perspective, and it's exciting, and I feel like that is actually a very, like, in thinking about being a woman, I'm like, oh, like audiences are deprived, so like there's, we're offering a lot of just unique new perspectives, experiences, stories. Like, it was so much fun to get a peek into all of these amazing filmmakers' brains last night, so it's been fun.
I would have to say I appreciate just the support network that we have, because I think being very aware of our position of not being quite the status quo yet, I feel like has allowed us to be there for one another in a way that has, I've really appreciated. Like, I have a whole lot of aunties in this industry that I love, because it is that feeling of just knowing that you can turn to people and ask honestly for advice. And it isn't jaded, it isn't tainted, but if anything, knowing that we're making space for each other. And that's, I guess, the second part of it is, like, I love this space that we're continuing to make, because we're just now scratching the surface of inclusivity and intersections. Like, we haven't even really gotten into the intersections of what being a female is, and gender and sexual identity and race and ethnicity. And so, like, and so I'm excited for just everything that's going to happen in which we get to layer our identities, because, you know, we don't get to wake up and choose to be a female. We don't get to wake up and choose to be black. We don't get to wake up and choose what we're doing that day. If anything, it lives at once, and it's quite messy and quite beautiful, and I'm really excited for just everything that's to come of it.
What she said.
I'm just excited for Yara Shahidi to be an artist in the world.
I just spent a lot of time as an actor watching people make a lot of the same mistakes over and over again on various projects, but not having the ability or it being unwelcomed when I would try and point out that maybe I'd seen that mistake before. So I don't think this has anything to do with being a woman necessarily, but I just enjoyed being able to take those years of experience and trying to, you know, avoid those things and then steal from the best directors that I'd worked with. So I don't know that that has anything to do with gender, but it was fun to be able to, like, put that into practice after years of being on sets.
I mean, I think everybody said it. I mean, we've all said our perspective. We've all done this. I think, for me, the inclusivity here with these amazing directors that we have this sisterhood going on, I think this is pretty fucking cool.
I agree. I think it's so cool, and I think we're living. This is a great time to be a filmmaker who happens to be female. Like, one day, hopefully, it's not going to be, you know, female filmmakers, you're just going to be your filmmaker that's doing great stuff. Thank you guys for being here. This was amazing. We heard so many good stuff. Thank you for being at our first ever live podcast recording.
Yay! Very cool.